Then I realized a new movie is streaming on Crunchyroll that I may watch, which is a movie adaptation of a manga by a former idol.
Okay. Tell me more.
All I know about it is the main character is supremely unlikable and it does not have a good ending.
So, like
Great.
most anime, got
No.
What?
What do you
I think
when she
slam
says
on most
supreme,
anime protagonists out of
I think
nowhere.
when she says supremely unlikable, she means like actual bad person
Oh, okay. All right. I
type
hear you.
deal. Like her
Okay.
motivation is like from what I know, her motivation is extraordinarily self-centered. Her life is transactions. You know what I mean? She's not making connections. It's transition. I need you.
Transaction, not transition.
Gotcha, Pawn.
God, oh God, we don't need to talk about Gyatadora, whatever Riz Skibidi, whatever that
Oh, the Konami game.
screenshot. Yes,
Crunchyroll, take me home. No, it
I
froze.
picked
Damn it,
up.
no. Why can't I stream this?
I
It's
picked up.
bad. Jay is putting her hand in her face.
I picked up Fights in Tight Spaces because it was on sale. I had a deep discount, and that's a cool game.
Also today I watched the trailer for that weird bloody lesbian anime that just got announced.
I was like half asleep in bed this morning and scrolling through my YouTube feed and saw that. I was like, what the fuck is this thing?
Did you
Like,
watch
what?
it?
Not with like sound on. I let the YouTube
Well,
thumbnail
yeah, I
preview
mean,
thing play out, but
you can
yes, I
just
did
see
watch
the
it.
lesbian sex happening and the blood.
That's putting it of like it's not that graphic. You see a knee going between a
She's
thigh.
on
That's
top of
all
her
you
with her
see.
ass in like a v like it's you're right, it's not porn, but it's pretty, like, it's on the edge. It's
It's
edging.
like or it didn't happen.
Like you don't even see a kiss.
You got a kiss.
Is there actual nudity involved here?
No.
Well, at least
Okay.
not.
You see like butts and panties,
Yeah,
and that's
they're
basically it.
in their underwear on
Yeah,
top of
exactly,
each other.
Evie. It's the most chaste idea of like sex happening, which is like dry humping.
This just brings me back to like Symphogear and the like just kiss already, and then in like the last season they're like fully naked, staring God in the face, holding hands at a distance. It's like just put your face on each other. Kiss already. Anyway.
Like, when someone says you see sex happening, unless I'm like watching the beginning of Antichrist, which just has Willem Dafoe penetration, like, right in the beginning, the
Well,
movie that they had to get a dick stunt double because Willem Dafoe's dick was too big.
That is such a flex.
And truly. What were
Let
you
me
gonna
put it
say,
this
Frisian?
way. No, it's not on-screen sex happening. I doubt, very few anime would be so daring to have that happening.
Do you at least hear like the turtle fucking sound wav, but in like another
No,
room where it's like,
no,
no,
I don't want to
it's.
have to input that in. You're making this more difficult for Editor J on the back end. Please, I don't
Fine, I'll
want to
just.
have that MP3 saved on this computer.
Fine, I'll just pick Megazone 2-3 next time so you can have the first person pink fucking scene where they exposit the plot as you have a first person shot of a woman having sex.
I see.
The
She
Matrix is
exposed on my
inspired by
plot to
this.
like.
I want to say I've watched Megazone 2-3 and I don't remember that scene.
Wow.
Yeah,
Sounds timeless.
you would have remembered it if you watched it more recently.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like that movie, if I did watch it, kind of went in one ear right out the other. I bought like the combination Megazone 2-3 1 and 2, so I have both of those.
I
Anyways,
have all
we've
three on
fallen
Blu-ray. Yes,
we've
even the
fallen
third
down
one
the
that has almost no animation in it.
Is it the third? The third one doesn't have Cyber Game Hard on. That's the second one.
No,
right?
That's the third one. All the third things one. Okay. Like, it's the best hard on. I beat it every time. Oh, not this hard on. You won't. Just watch me.
Anyways,
hi. One of my favorite Cell Dweller songs.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Put It On
Are
the List.
Are we starting this podcast?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been recording for 8 minutes.
We might as well.
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film? That's the gist. Put it on the list.
You missed so much lore.
That's fine. I'll read it later.
You missed
too
an
bad.
Argument over
the
who's...
people listening to the podcast right now are going to have to wait until the end of the podcast to hear that lore. Because my name is Jay.
My name is Bree.
I'm Evie.
I'm Bridget. Sorry for whatever loud sound that was.
We didn't hear it, but I'll hear it in the edit. This is Put It On The List, the film podcast where every couple of weeks we, watch a movie together, and the next movie we watch has to be connected by either cast or crew. Last time on Put It On The List, we watched Little Miss Sunshine. This time around, we're watching The Princess Bride, and you may be thinking to yourself, wait a second, those films don't have a connection between the two of them.
Not at all.
And that's because right now we're at the end of our first year of podcasting and everyone is using their wild cards before they run out at the end of the year.
We're in garbage time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're in the end of the fiscal year where everyone has to use their vacation hours or they are gone.
Everyone's releasing their games done in the office. In a vain effort to not get laid off.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't need to talk about video game layoffs.
But
yeah, we're here to talk about The Princess Bride. But before all that hubbub, Bree, I don't feel like you can go over what you've been up to as of late because you spent the last, 10 minutes talking about that.
I joined a gym, I'm getting fit, I'm working on stuff, hire me to do art for you. There you go. VGen.co/Asnesbo. Anyway, that's me lately. I've just been keeping up with things, you know.
Evie, aside from freshening up, what you been up to?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still unemployed. I might be getting a job soon, I don't know.
Yeah!
I'm trying. And hopefully I can move soon. I'm also trying to do that. Otherwise, I'm just kicking it.
Hell yeah. Just kicking it.
That you time. Let's go.
Speaking of just kicking it, looking like she's a million miles away, Bridget, what have you been up to over there? Aside from watching the anime that you discussed earlier.
Me and Evie finished up Puppets Season 4.
For those who don't know, Puppets
right. Thunderbolt
is...
Thunderbolt Fantasy, though. Show by Gena Urobuchi. You might know Gena Urobuchi from the weird Metroid-esque rabbit platformer that's on Steam Next Fest. You can download a demo of it today. Did you want to hear Kiryu as a rabbit? Well, here you go.
What you might actually know him from is he's the dude that wrote Madoka Magica.
And Fate Zero.
And Fate
Zero. Song of Saya and... Monster? Did he write Monster?
No.
That's Naoki Urasawa.
Okay. But he's a prolific writer, and Thunderbolt Fantasy is like, as far as like what it is, it's like a wuxia puppet show where these puppets get into sword fights and go on adventures, and it's really fun. The only thing about this last fourth season of Thunderbolt or whatever is that it's very clearly it's setting up for the movie that they're going to put out that's going to finish up the entire show. So it's just like, it's like if a TV show cut off right before a season finale. And it's just like, all right, see you in the movie.
Yeah, we'll be back then. As someone who has only seen half watched Thunderbolt Fantasy, like very much just kind of in passing while hanging out with you two. The main thing I take away from Thunderbolt Fantasy is that I'm glad that Gen Urobuchi has a platform to just kind of get silly with it.
No, yeah.
Considering the usual material that he's working with, he just has a thing that's like, I don't know. I just went to Taiwan, saw these puppet shows, and wanted to do something like that.
Yeah, he has a venue to write a fun fantasy story with his D&D characters, and that's great.
Although his actual D&D character, which is in the show eventually, is no longer in the show.
You can get some of the greatest works from a serious person when they start being able to just kind of get silly with it.
What's the examples you're thinking of?
For me, it's like, okay, so this is going to get obscure here, but there's a band. You're laughing at me. There's a band called Electric Six. You may have heard of them. They're the gay bar people. They have an album that's called, like, I Will Restrict Everything That Keeps Me From Becoming the Master or something like that. That's, like, really outside their range. Arguably really, really great. The lead singer of Tool made, like, a project called Pussifer, which is where he's just basically doing, like, weirder, bizarre shit that he wants to do. And it's way more interesting than Tool. You know, there's, like, these things where you get these people going, I just want to fuck around. And, like, just with fucking around, you get, like, some weirder shit going on. It's so cool to see.
I think the sort of, like, thing about the... A thing that comes to mind for me is, like, when Double Fine... back in the day would do their like Amnesia Fortnite stuff where after a big project, they'll be like, okay, everyone break into groups 2 weeks to make a prototype of just whatever the fuck. And then that kind of helps drive like what they ended up working on for the years that follow, which were like a bunch of like very small, but not of type and very interesting projects, you know, like Stacking and Iron Brigade and stuff like that. And I think it's just, I imagine like after like a long creative work where you're doing like a whole bunch of, you're putting a whole lot into just like one big idea. You have a lot of stuff left over that you're just like ready to put into something else. And so like getting silly and like often that could be getting silly with it, but it's often, I think it's just like folks are often ready to go off in a different direction, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, I think another good example is something like the Wachowskis.
Oh, sure.
Going from, you know, the Matrix franchise and then like what the very next thing they do is Speed Racer, isn't it?
Oh, Speed Racer.
I think it's V for Vendetta.
Oh, no, that's right. It's V for Vendetta. But still, like, that's that whole front chunk of their, like, catalog is, like, pretty serious things. And then they're just like, no, Speed Racer. Yeah. Check this shit out. And it's one of the most incredible, like, visual spectacles you've ever seen in your fucking life.
No,
they work like Cloud Atlas.
Yeah. Sure. Like, they also got some goofing around into, like, Sense8 and everything, but, like, sure. Speed Racer was allowed to be fully cartoony in the way that, like, a Speed Racer movie should be. Mm-hmm. I think, it, you know, and it was a weirdly... People took that movie real bad when it came out, like, because, you know, I think you're expecting a certain thing from these directors, and, like, you go into this and you're like, what the fuck is happening? But, like, with the after-the-fact context of, like, you're doing a cartoony sort of movie, you're fitting that in, you're creating this kind of surreal feeling, like the artistry of it is actually incredible if you just take it at face value. It's really good.
It's a very like, you might not get it, but your kids are gonna love it,
yeah,
type moment. Oh, in, yeah, filmmaking, where like you watch it 10 years later and you're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine like fresh out of like post 9/11 cinema,
uh-huh,
you're seeing something like Speed Racer and you're like, oh, my head hurts. What, yeah, is this shit?
But it is like really cool to see something from an artist and it's just like, oh, I didn't know you had this in you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just like, I didn't know that you had just like
Wuxia puppet show in you.
Yeah, like kind of flighty Wuxia puppet show in you. Gen Urobuchi.
Now, Evie, you might not know this, but there's a bad show called Chaos Dragon, which is the anime adaptation of said D&D game with a bunch of other anime writers and directors. It is a terrible show. It is kind of funny to watch. It's like, this is your D&D game? But
this seems like the worst D&D game of all time. What are we doing here?
But
not everybody can make a record of Lodoss War, you know?
Yeah.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Not everyone can do Record of Lodoss War. Not everyone can do Berserk.
Or like Critical Role, you know? Where just like that's a bunch of different creative people doing a D&D thing and like in a format where it's like intended to be consumed by other people, but like, and it's successful. But anime voice actors can do that. Anime writers, maybe not.
Yeah. you have to be an actual like writer and not someone who's just been, you know, kind of writing on niche tropes for the last however long of your career to make something interesting there. You been up to anything else, Bridget, or mostly that?
Just been working on sound mods and the like. Yeah,
you played a really interesting game last night.
Oh yeah, I played the Adventures.
No, Tom.
The Adventures
of Little Ralph,
which is the story of a guy whose love interest gets kidnapped by evil naked man. He is straight up. He even comments at how good his buff
naked he is.
He's the ultimate naked man. He gets turned into a child, and thus begins a platformer experience with bizarre enemies. Certain boss fights are just a fighting game. Like, you temporarily grow back up to being an adult, and then you have to participate in a two-button fighting game.
Thankfully, your VOD will probably be out by the time that, you know, this podcast episode goes on. Anyone listening to this podcast, I, like, legitimately would love for you to watch her playthrough of this game. It might be in my top five favorite games of this year already.
It was fun.
Like, that game is amazing just because of how fucking weird it is, how extremely violent that game is.
At first I was like, oh, this is a game for children. And then he lands on a spike trap and gets impaled.
I think the thing about it is just like it feels like the designers of that game had a good sense of like when to surprise a player, because like there are so many instances where like the level design just like swerves and just like hits you with something you wouldn't necessarily expect, and then you die in some really hilarious way.
Oh yeah. It's very like Kaizo Mario level, like Dark Souls level design shit, to the point that like as it was getting later on into the game, I was like, I feel like people at From Software had to have played this video game.
Oh yeah.
For their influence, just because of how much the level design feels like the people working on the game like kind of poking you and saying, ah, you fell for it, you little fucker.
Gotcha. It's like, hey, you're right. There's the cart sequence where you have to constantly jump between moving carts as they explode.
You went to the like minecart section, I heard Jay pop the fuck off.
I love a good minecart section because
people
complain about like sewer levels being the worst.
Yeah, no.
Minecart levels are the worst levels in games.
Like, the thing to note is this isn't a game where you're controlling the minecart. You are at the minecart's whim, and then you have to jump and figure out
when the minecart is going to explode.
You figure it out, you know.
You do.
Also, just like the fact that whenever you eat shit in the minecart level, you hit like your character's body just rolls on the track for a while.
Yeah, like just... if you die in front of the minecart, the minecart just pulls your dead, rolls your dead body to the screen.
It's like watching a real terrible car accident, yeah, like in front of you. You're just like, oh god.
There's some intended dark comedy in the death in that game.
Like the amount of times, like if he gets hit by fire, he disintegrates.
Yeah. He explodes.
He can be crushed with
there's a blob thing that will like eat you, and you get to see like a 1980s The Blob type, like Ralph, like pressing against the skin from the inside, be like, oh, like it's terrifying.
This is all happening to a child, by the way.
Oh yeah,
technically an adult.
An adult in a child's body.
Yeah, he got hit by the Detective Conan gas and became a child.
Except this time, Detective Conan gets stabbed.
Yes, this time the silhouette man is literally slitting Conan's throat, just like, ah!
the game's is weirdly also obsessed, weirdly with farts. Obsessed with fart.
I'm glad we linked up mentally. We had the new type moment for a second there.
Like, for anyone who might have grown up watching the French animated show Totally Spies, I want you to imagine if instead of all the fetishes, every single episode had some importance in farting. I'm pretty sure that farts are the source of clouds in that world. Like, that's gotta be where they come from. Like, it's just, everything's farting. Constantly farting up a storm. It's so...
The game has, like, a fuck you gauntlet right at the end of it.
It's like...
So funny.
Gauntlet of Hell.
Like, very much.
And that's
Mickey's,
also where they introduce
Mickey's
the
Dick Smasher.
There's the Mickey's Dick Smasher section. There's two sections of, like, just maggot pits where if you fall in, the maggots pound onto you.
To the point that, like, your cartoon skull, like, pops out of the pile once you die. It's fucked up.
It's kind of crazy. Watch the VOD, it's really good.
You get to see that kid get violently impaled on spikes like he's in that, like, 2012 Tomb Raider game.
Kid's getting hurt. Still my favorite comedy.
When he gets electrocuted, his charred corpse is, like, the thing left over.
Yeah.
Great game.
Yeah.
Great
either,
fucking
either
video
watch
game.
The VOD or play the game. It seems like it's a fun game. Yeah.
Experience it for yourself.
Yeah, it recently got fan-translated, so... You can experience the story.
Make sure you switch over to normal mode, though, because the game defaults to easy.
I didn't check the difficulty, and the game defaults to easy. And if you're on easy, it doesn't give you the last few levels.
It just drops a third of the game for no reason, which is weird.
But yeah, that was great. Speaking of video games, I've been trying to dive back into video games a little bit on my end here. Like, I started up Paradise Killer yesterday, not far enough into it to have a strong impression aside from that aesthetic is pretty good.
It's a gorgeous game.
If you
game.
Love the vaporwave and city pop aesthetic, that's a good game to just hang out in for like 12 hours.
I might stream it at some point. It looks really cool.
For sure. I booted up La Mulana to see what the hell that game is about.
Did you have a notebook handy?
Not yet, but I haven't gotten far enough in it to need it. But the big thing is I saw you two play through a little game called Blade Chimera.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to finally, like, check that out. You might have mentioned it, that it was developed by, like, Team Ladybug, but that didn't enter my brain. So when I booted up that game, I was like, oh, it's these guys. I was very excited because I would say that Team Ladybug, more so than anyone else in, like, the last 20 years who's making a Metroidvania, are, like, the true successors to, like, Konami and that one guy's, like, design philosophy when it comes to, like, Castlevania games, where it's just like, no, we're gonna make a solid, like, 4 out of 5 video game that is just about exploring a big map, fighting some cool bosses, you're in and you're out in, like, 15 hours. And I'm at a point right now where that was like exactly what I needed, and I loved my experience with that. And Team Ladybug is always really good at, with their like battle mechanics, like making something that really helps drive like a solid momentum behind the game that you're playing. And this game is no different in that respect. What were you gonna say, Bridget?
I was gonna say you enjoyed it mostly except for the forced narrative part, which I watched you get through.
There's a section of that game that like wants to do the immersive story thing where like you have to like move around really slow for a story beat, and I didn't like that part of the game. But the rest of the game is good. What were you gonna say, Evie?
Yeah, I like that game doesn't overstay its welcome. It's just like we're not gonna fill up with a bunch of craft. Like, it's got some side story stuff that you could engage with if you want to. That's like, that kind of ranges from being like a just a neat little narrative beat that's unessential to being just like completely not important in the slightest.
Go kill some demons.
Yeah. And like some of that stuff is like tied into the story or like has bespoke like designs involved. But for the most part, it's just like, just play the damn game and eventually you will be done playing the damn game.
And then I went the whole nine yards and I 100% of that got like the true ending on it. That final boss.
Did you finally beat it?
I did beat that final boss.
I got to watch her do it.
It is very much a like that boss felt the most like, so I haven't played the Deedlit game that they did, but I did play Toho Luna Nights. That final boss feels the most like something out of that game where it's like, it's a challenging fight. Like, you gotta, like, be on your Dark Souls, like, pattern memorization type shit to get through it. But I eventually beat it. It wasn't too bad, but it was very frustrating.
It didn't take as many days as you beating the Sekiro final boss.
Oh my God. But we don't need to talk about that.
No, we don't.
Like, I would recommend you check out the Deedlit game. It's very neat, Deedlit. Obviously, if you see Deedlit's run, you know it's literally the Alucard run. Like, almost.
Remember when we talked about movies?
Instead of guns, it has a different mechanic where it's kind of like Ikaruga in that you swap. Elements like light and dark, whether you can absorb the damage.
Yeah,
so it's neat. I actually like that game a little bit more than Blade Chimera, but it's still, Blade Chimera is still a good game.
That's what I've been up to, and now it's time for icebreaker questions. Put it on the list.bsky.social. please follow us there, send us your questions, comments, concerns, top five favorite child deaths. No.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about The Adventures of Little Ralph.
Macaulay
again.
Culkin in My Girl, where he's stung to death by bees. X the bonus Mac and me points
kid,
if you have.
Mac and me kid getting pushed off of the cliff in the wheelchair.
That one scene.
How
from,
can you forget his name? In that scene, they only have one voice of dialogue, and that's Eric.
To be fair, I'm not paying attention to the dialogue. I'm paying attention to the kid tumbling down the side of the cliff. What were you going to say, Evie?
It doesn't fucking matter. Let's move on.
It seriously was the best talk show bit ever.
Just... Okay, no. You were complaining about us talking about movies. Okay. So please send us your questions, comments at putonthelist.bsky.social.
We'll look at them.
We got a couple of things here, mostly just a couple of comments. We got a comment from Dusty saying Osmosis Jones is simply a pale imitation of Cells at Work Black, which is unafraid to inflict kidney stones and STDs on its personified cells of the human body. That's an anime reference for an anime I have not seen. That probably the majority of the podcast has not seen.
Yeah, Cells at Work Black is like
the edgy. The Cells edgy, at Work.
Yeah, like Cells at Work is like a happy Osmosis Jones, and Cells at Work Black is dark Osmosis. Dark
All of this shit is just downstream of Fantastic Voyage, anyway. Let's be real about it.
We all know it's a Magic School Bus ripoff. It doesn't fucking matter.
I think they might have watched the Magic
School Bus. Body Wars.
Oh, God damn it.
Directed by Leonard Nimoy.
We got a comment here from Owen, specifically talking about the topic of discussion for this week, which is The Princess Bride, where he says, I first saw this movie at 20 plus years old, and I wished I had seen it as a kid because I think it fundamentally would have altered something in me. Don't know what that something would have been. That I think that's the thing I would be more interested in knowing. But he goes on to say, I'm not sure exactly what or if it would have been for the better, but something would have changed.
Something.
And then his follow-up question to that is, what's the most foolish thing you've done to impress someone you're interested in?
Oh,
I watched at least a season of Supernatural.
Oh.
Which that's pretty foolish.
That's a lot.
It's poetry. I've written like poetry for girls before.
God, oh my God. This was actually like during like early adulthood, in fact. You know the person I dated before you?
Yes.
Like, oh my God. They kept sending me Ken Ashcorp music, and I had to keep listening to it and going like, that's a good part right here. This guy totally isn't like a weird womanizing like pederasty. He's a bear. That's cute. They got a little, okay, that's, this music's great. Yeah, it's the nerdiest and dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. I love it. Wonderful. I'll listen to it more so I can quote it around you and get your attention.
Well, that's Bree's answer.
Yeah.
Evie, you gave a look when I asked that question, Evie.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. It's just like, I don't know, it might be marry them so that they can get on my health insurance. That's pretty, in retrospect, that was very dumb. That was a very dumb thing to do.
And the winner is Evie.
Bridget, what about you?
I don't know. Be myself, I guess.
That's maybe the most noble thing you could do to like attract someone that you're interested in is just fucking be yourself.
Yeah. If you relax into someone completely fucking different by the time you've really gotten to be with someone, you were fucking lying. At least you were being honest about it.
Yeah. But I wanted to burn through those because we are, in fact, almost 50 minutes through this recording and we have not talked about the movie we're going to be discussing.
What kind of hurry are we in?
I guess that's fair. Like, here's the thing that I was going to say. This might end up being the shortest discussion, not because this movie is bad.
No.
This movie was, in fact, quite good. However, it's one of those movies that I walked away from being like, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, not tepid thumbs up, but the like, yeah.
It still holds up since I've seen it as a kid as being like, yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's a nice film.
But yeah, Bree, take us through a cursory summary of The Princess Bride.
It's a cartoonishly convolutedly written plot, so I'll try to do my best here. Basically, it is a story of true love, fearing that that person that you loved might have disappeared and died, and then that person basically coming back to find you and saving you from ending up having to marry this, like, shithead prince.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, the princess becoming a princess bride, you know, and then, yeah. But yeah, she wants to be the bride of this guy. So yeah, that's basically the long and short of like the gist of it.
Sure. But really at its heart, what I would say The Princess Bride is about is it is a story about telling stories.
Yeah.
Because a key thing to note about The Princess Bride is that the framing device for this is you have little Fred Savage in his bed sick at home one day, and Grandpa, played by Peter Falk, aka Columbo.
We could not unsee the Columbo.
In old man makeup, comes over and gives him like a birthday Christmas gift. Is it birthday or Christmas?
I think he just brings a gift because he's sick.
I think it's it was snowy and there were lights outside. I think it might be Christmas.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, he brings the gift over. It's like, oh yeah, it's this book that my grandpa used to read to me. I used to read it to your dad. And, you know, I feel like it's important that I pass it along to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, he spends the day at, you know, little Fred Savage's bedside reading him this story of the Princess Bride.
Which I have to say, I completely forgot that was the framing device of this movie.
See, this, I feel like I'm gonna talk more about the meta elements of this movie than I'm gonna talk about, like, the actual story of sure. this movie. Because this is a movie that has, it's in that, like, tier of movie that has only existed as, like, pop culture ephemera for me for like my entire life. Like everything I know about this movie is like entirely just people I have met in my life. Like it's a very coworker coded movie.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that like the discussion of like favorite movies will come up at work and you know someone will mention like, have you ever seen The Princess Bride? And I'll be like, no. And they'll be like, what do you mean you've never seen The Princess Bride? That's crazy. And I have to be there like, I don't know. Yeah. It just wasn't a part of my household. It existed as that. And something that I saw talked about on VH1's I Love the 80s. That's like the only way this movie has ever existed for me throughout my lifetime. However, all three of you have seen this movie
yeah.
before. When the hell did y'all experience this movie? Because it completely passed me by.
Real talk, it was one of those, like, the teacher is not feeling it today. She's hungover. It's watch a video day.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. So yeah.
I was quite young when I first watched it. It was like, I don't know, I think I might have been in junior high. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a copy of it on DVD.
It was just like a movie that the family would watch if it was on cable and stuff. I couldn't tell you when I first watched it.
Yeah, I feel like this movie has existed for like as like a nostalgia artifact for a long time at this point. Like if the kings of nostalgia are like, you know, your Star Wars or your Indiana Jones, then you maybe got like a Ghostbusters or something. Like I feel like The Princess Bride is like right under that.
Yeah, where, it's like a Duke of Nostalgia.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And I think in that respect, it kind of get like the kind of the work of it kind of gets lost in people being like, ah, inconceivable. Ah.
Yeah. Remember when he says that, which that's.
It's far greater than the sum of its memes, you know? You can hear the thing and go, ah, they said the thing, but, like, it fits where it is, you know?
Yeah, when you actually get to those moments in the movie, they mean more than, you know, just the quote that they are, like, displaying to you. Like, same thing with the, like, my name is Inigo Montoya, you kill my father, prepare to die.
Yeah,
like
part of that is, like, yeah, you're referencing the movie, but in the context of the movie, it's a repetition joke. It's like the escalation of keep using it.
Yeah.
Yes, basically anytime Wallace Shawn is confronted with something that like he doesn't believe in or like doubts or something like that. Oh, that's inconceivable.
It's completely inconceivable.
Like you could clearly see the boat chasing him and he's like,
yeah,
there's not a boat. No, who would be chasing us?
Yeah.
This word, you keep using it. I don't believe it means what you think it does.
Yeah. I think we should. We're kind of diving into too much into the deep end. We should probably talk about like the plot of the actual story that Peter Falk is telling to Fred Savage, which is. There's this lady living out in the fields. She's got a farm boy that works underneath her. And, you know, within the first, like, 5 minutes, they have fallen madly in love with one another. However, he has to go on some, like, journey across the sea. She hears word that he unfortunately got killed by a pirate. So she has had to move on with her life. And she's been courted by, like, the prince of nearby kingdom or something like that. And, you know, in the midst of that, you know, oncoming wedding, she gets kidnapped by a group led by Wallace Shawn. His character name is like Vizzini, I think.
Vizzini.
Vizzini, Inigo Montoya, and Andre the Giant.
That's Fezzik.
Yes, which knocks it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
He's just your fun, not quite bumbling, but like slightly...
A little oafish.
A little dumb.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little too literal with, like, the orders that people give him, where he's like, okay, I'll immobilize this guy, conks him on the head, and, like, fully knocks him unconscious.
Yeah. But also, he's just, like, you know, he gets the order to kill...
To kill her.
Yeah, to kill Wesley, but he's just like, that's not very sporting, and so he's just like arranges a situation where he gives him a chance, you know. So it's just like there's like he's canny in a certain way, but like he's basically
like throughout the movie there are only like three characters who would be considered unchivalrous, basically.
Yeah.
More or less. It's Wallace Shawn, it's the prince, and it's like the prince's right hand man.
Yeah, the count.
You mean six hand man.
I think six a lot fingy. Of the comedy.
He is not a six hand man. No. We're not talking about Agoro from Mortal Kombat here.
But I think that a lot of the comedy and also a lot of the charm of this film is just how human you make these otherwise very kind of like, you know, nailed in the ground stereotypical sort of characters.
That's
where they just have these kind of casual back and forths where they're like, no, like I'm not just gonna fucking drop you. That's not like I'll fight you proper. I'll wait till you get up here. You know. But those little talks they have, like just the humanistic way that they are portrayed in a realistic manner is just so nice.
It's such a fucking fascinating movie to watch in our modern age of pop culture, where like we've kind of talked about before when discussing like Marvel movies and the like, but like so much of pop culture now is about like no one in the fiction like really believing in the fiction that they are participating in.
Yeah.
Like everything is, you know, forefronted with the like undercutting of the thing that people are participating in. And this movie does such a fascinating balance of like, there's a lot of this movie poking fun at itself and the situations that characters are getting into, but like the thing that it does the order of it right, which is like it believes in it first before it takes the piss out of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's from the jump framed as like a story being told to like it's a children's story, like even within the framing of the movie. Right.
Yeah. And that I think that helps a lot with it, because I think that's the importance of like Wallace Shawn's character like dying so early in the film. Like you get through the first act and he's like the first character who is just like outright killed off.
Yeah. Not knocked out, but murked. Yeah.
And I think that's like super important because he is the character who is trying to act like above all in this. And like once you like start considering that meta element of like this is a children's story, this is literally Peter Falk reading a bedtime story to his grandson, and that is like the story telling you like, no, you're not fucking above this. If you're participating in this, you are like, you are believing in this story that you are seeing in one way or another. Like that's the death of Vizzini is that moment, and then like even two-thirds of the way through that you have the moment where like Fred Savage stops Peter Falk in the middle of the story because he feels like he got like the details wrong, like he's telling the story incorrectly or something like that, because Fred Savage being the savage little savvy little shit that he is like, no, that's not right. That person's not dead. They're definitely still alive. Like, this isn't the correct sequence
of
events.
That can't be the way it goes.
And then it turns out that he's right. And he's like, see, I knew that was the case. And Peter Falk is like, yes, you're very smart. Shut up.
And then he continues to read.
It's the movie, like, reminding you, like, you are not above this. You are in this with us. So just shut up and fucking enjoy the swashbuckling experience that you are going through here. Like, it's refreshing, yeah. Is the main thing I would say as someone coming to it for the first time to see something like that.
Yeah, I also want to point out real quick before we get too far beyond it, the first death, like that scene with the drinks and the poison, probably one of my favorite, like I super remembered that scene from this movie when I thought about like pulling it up because I was like, that, it's so funny watching that like know-it-all asshole just fucking collapse.
Well, the funniest thing about it is the ultimate outcome, which is, you know, she asks Wesley, like, how did you know which one was poison? He's like, I poisoned them both.
Yeah, they were both.
I built up an immunity to it.
Yeah, like,
just like Vizzini didn't even think to like question the premise of the challenge itself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like,
he's running this mental calculus going, no, you see, because I am smart and you, but you're expecting me to be smart. So you would obviously put the poison in. And he's running all this and the guy's just looking at him like straight faced with a smirk, not changing at all.
The funniest thing is, she keeps saying like, are you sure?
Yeah. Are you sure? I think you're trying to get me to give something away. No, because I don't know. And like, he's won the whole time. Like,
yeah.
I mean, eventually he just goes, hey, what's the hell for there?
He was killed by the hubris of being given a chance to be the smarter person by that narrative. But like, if you can outsmart me.
Which again, that is why like it is a story about telling stories. Yeah. Like you kind of see it in like a lot of the characters in the story and their interactions. Like the whole thing with Wesley is, you know, he did not actually die. What happened is, you know, he got captured by the great Pirate Roberts, and the Pirate Roberts is just like, you know, you work for me for today and I'm gonna kill you. I'll probably kill you tomorrow morning. And it keeps happening over and over again until Bisky barks at us because her toy is stuck under the couch. I'll be right back. He keeps doing the same cycle until the great Pirate Roberts pulls him aside and is like, you know, actually, I'm not the great Pirate Roberts. I was like given the title of the great Pirate Roberts by the
My
last
name is
guy.
Ryan.
Yeah. a great actual name for a pirate to have. Just like, I was Ryan. Which he wasn't the great Pirate Roberts either. He was actually given that name by someone else, like the passing of a legacy down throughout the years.
It's all about branding.
Basically, yeah.
Starting my new social media platform.
Yeah.
The Great Pirate. I don't have enough sauce in me to make like a fake app.
Moving on.
It's like the Jeremy Renner app, but only for the great Pirate Roberts.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have that like passing of the legacy there, but like the story that, you know, what's the name of the princess? In
Buttercup,
yes.
Buttercup.
That in and of itself is very funny.
I kept getting the name mixed up with her horse. So,
but yeah, the whole thing is like Buttercup had the story of Wesley being dead, like passed on to her. You have like the narrative that Wesley is crafting in that interaction with Wallace Shawn of like, you think that I have done this thing, but actually this is what we did here. Like it's all stories and legacy. You have it with like Inigo Montoya also. That's like the big one. I would say for me, that's like the most resonant part of this movie is that character. But we can get to that as we get later on in the podcast.
And of course, Mr. Humperdinck.
Another very funny name, Prince Humperdinck.
Yeah.
Every time they say it, I was trying not to laugh because it's so fucking ludicrous of a name to have.
It's interesting to consider this movie as like an intertext with something like Shrek because of how clearly Shrek is just like escalating a lot of what is in this movie.
Like,
taking a piss out of the archetypes, yeah.
But I would argue that at the end of the day, Shrek does not have the sauce that this movie does.
I think the thing is just like, in all the ways that this movie is just like not cynical, how it is like very much like it's about stories, but it's also about love.
Yeah.
And like Shrek is just like,
Shrek is more venomous.
Yeah, whatever, fuck all that.
It's made with Shrek 1 specifically was made with more venom.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you get into the whole backstory of like why that movie was even made. And like that is a movie that is made out of spite. And like watching
let's make Michael Eisner to the bad guy from The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
And get Mike Myers.
And then meanwhile, you watch The Princess Bride, and like that is a movie that like pretty much doesn't have a spiteful bone in its body, at least in like the overall vibes of it. You know, like there are characters who are like striving for like vengeance and stuff like that, but it is like noble causes.
Yeah.
And the like it's understandable.
Pretty, sorry. It's very explicit in who the villains are and who the heroes are.
Yeah, the heroes are the giant rats and the fire.
That's not the hero. The hero is the massive hill that those poor stunt people got pushed down in that one scene. Like, that's, tumble, they take down the hill, looks fucked up.
No, yeah.
Like, I feel bad for those stunt people. Like, they're,
I also
like,
love how obviously a stunt person they, the leads thing
you,
is. Like,
you can
oh, God.
See whoever is playing Wesley in that scene has, like, a proper, like, handlebar mustache, yeah. I feel like I
fully
can
gray,
see there.
Like, yeah, beard, yeah. It's very clearly a different person. Yeah.
That whole sequence is so funny because,
it's
like,
really good.
Yeah, because like Wesley gets thrown, like gets shoved down this hill, and like Buttercup immediately realizes that it's him, and just like, oh no, what have I done? And throws
yeah,
herself
he says,
down
the
hill.
That was the thing. The only thing he ever responded when he was ordered around as the farm boy is, "As you wish."
As you wish.
So she was like, "Oh my God, it's him."
Carrie Elway's fully in his, like, you know, comedic physical comedy arc at this point in his career with, like, this movie and then, like, Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny that he would go on to do the Saw movies because arguably he's not a very good, like, serious actor, but as a comedy performer, he's pretty good.
Not
like,
not
I...
Yet.
I gotta hand it to him for
comedy
this movie.
Comedy is very undersold as an art form when it comes to acting, but, like, if that's your niche, like, keep doing that. Give more good comedy. Like,
when you... That moment in the fire swamp where, like, he notices the rats, like, like crawling around, but
yeah.
Is just kind of tries to ignore it while he's walking with Princess Buttercup. Like, he's going through all the list of everything that the fire swamp contains and being like, oh yeah, we handled that fine, we handled this fine. And then she's like, but what about the enormous rodents that supposedly live in here? He's like, those aren't real. And then immediately gets a puppet thrown at him.
Yeah, like, just yeah, frankly, I don't believe those are real.
Chucked at him.
Yeah.
But then the movie, like, immediately gets into that fight and it's fucked up looking.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's
maimed.
Yeah. Like, it very much leaning into the thing that I was talking about. Like, it's a movie that takes the piss out of itself, but it's not afraid to, like be very sincere about the, like, conflicts that it gets into over the course of it.
Yeah.
Shout like, outs to
me
Puppet
that
Tongue.
Shout outs to just the rat suit.
Oh, yeah.
And whoever was in that rat suit. Like, it's a great rat suit.
It's a really
yeah.
good rat suit.
Those are good rats.
They're the giant rats that make all the rules, truly.
To see what kind of trouble they can get themselves into, if you will.
Which is maiming Carrie Elway's in the
yeah.
middle of the swamp.
There are so, like, I feel like a thing about Rob Reiner in this era of his career is he ended up working with a whole lot of really interesting actors. Because, like, this is, like, around the time as, like, this is Spinal Tap, which he also
oh, sure.
directed. Mm-hmm. And, the Count is played by Christopher Guest. Humperdinck is played by Chris Sarandon, who would go on to be like Jack Skellington and all that stuff. But he was
oh.
also Leon in Dog Day Afternoon.
Hmm.
Oh
yeah,
huh?
And
yeah.
There are just like so many like
I mean,
the cast in this movie is great.
Wallace Shawn, in and of his, like, he's only in the movie for, like, 15 minutes or something like that. But, like, when you consider that, like, the two things that he's, or three things that he's known for is, like, Toy Story, his role in The Princess Bride, and My Dinner with Andre, which is, like, this revolutionary movie in that, like, it is just two dudes at a dinner table having a conversation.
It's just two guys.
For like 2 hours. And it's one of the most like riveting things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah.
Like it's very interesting. But no, yeah, Rob Reiner was on a real good kick and for this like stretch of time. Like he did This Is Spinal Tap, Princess Bride, Stand By Me. He did fucking Misery. One of the things he did after this. Which is such a flip from all these other movies. Like,
but yeah, everyone acts the crap out of their part amazingly well. It's such a well, like...
That is the thing about this movie.
It's a well-casted movie.
Well, it's a movie that's filled specifically with great fucking performances. Yeah. In the way that, like, Little Miss Sunshine has good performances, but that is a movie that is made by its casting.
Sure.
This is a movie that's made by the performances, specifically of those actors, more than anything else, because everyone is just all in on the character that they are playing.
It's like you say, the believing in itself, the like dedicating itself to it. Nothing feels like here's a guy in this place doing a thing, playing a role. It's like you feel something.
Yeah, it is a very funny movie to watch right after watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding for the first time, which is a movie that is like a vacuum of charisma amongst its cast, and specifically in the main couple in that film, to move over to this one where you're just like, You are locked in on those performances comparatively.
Let me say, Joey Fatone really brought it for the two scenes that he was in that movie.
That's the thing. He's only in two scenes. That one lady that you really love in that movie only like really gets that one scene that she gets to stand out in, where she reveals that she had a conjoined twin inside of her.
She consumed a twin in the womb and it kind of like biopsied out later. It's just bright spots few and far between in that movie, because it's mostly just like it's kind of slop.
Well, here's the story. I thought I had seen this film. I did, because I kind of popped in on my folks watching this back when I lived with them, right? And they were watching the one where like I think I came in where he's like teaching and like they're talking about getting their wedding together, and I watched the rest of it. I was like, that was quirky, that was fun. I didn't realize that's the last third of the movie and that the rest of it is just nothing burger, man. Like like you say, it's charisma, you know? It's just, oh my god, like somebody.
And really, even the last third of that movie isn't that good.
No.
The best scene of that movie is the 10 minutes that's just about the Greek family torturing the two wasps.
Oh yeah, and just getting wasted on Uzo and watching all this chaos happen and being like,
And like, I pull my punches there in saying that it's slop, because like, I feel like it's different, like...
It's
clearly
post 9/11 cinema.
Yeah,
like it is a movie from 2002. It's clearly like made by and for this one person. Like it's her vehicle essentially, and it's like it feels like both the processes and the intent involved in that are different than like, I don't know, fucking. What would even be they don't make movies like this anymore, essentially.
My favorite thing to come out of this film.
They don't make movies like this anymore, derogatory.
Yeah. My favorite thing to come out of this film is they made a small restaurant chain called My Big Fat Greek Restaurant. They're pretty good. At least the ones I went to were really good.
Anyways, that was the My Big Fat Greek Wedding portion.
All that to say, the Princess Bride shits on that movie. Like, way better.
Like, I wouldn't say that I was like fully invested in the romance between Wesley and Buttercup, but at the very least, there's like a chemistry between those two, like in just the ways that they like look at one another in any given scene. Like, we didn't even really talk about the fact that, like, the whole sequence with Wesley gallivanting around as Roberts when he's, like, trying to rescue Buttercup, she's still under the impression that Wesley is dead, and they, like, get into an argument because, like, she thinks that he's the pirate that killed him, and he's pissed because she's, like, getting ready to marry some other dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's mad because he's, like, she wasn't all in on the love.
Yeah, did I take your true love? Was it really? How quick, did you immediately run off with a prince, or did you wait a week to grieve?
Yeah.
Like,
it's kind of brilliant that the movie, like, sets up that romance so, like, kind of half-assedly in the beginning, only to, like, cut it off and then have you go through the rekindling of it with the adventure that happens there.
That's cute.
It's very cute. It's, like, an immensely cute movie. What's not cute is that Wesley gets captured by the prince and trapped in the Berserk torture dungeon.
The pit of suffering, wasn't it?
Yes, where they... The pit of despair.
They
strap suction cups to him that literally suck years off of his life.
Yeah. Which, listen, you don't get a lot of years in that era. That's, you know.
No. I'm trying to think of, like, what other key things to talk about at this point in the movie.
Hmm.
We get some more of, like, eventually we check back in on Inigo and Fezzik because, like, there's this whole thing where Humperdinck wants to clear out the thieves' forest before his wedding.
Basically as a distraction for the guards so he can kill Buttercup after the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Fezzik and Inigo are on separate sides of that whole thing. Inigo being in the forest, drunk off his ass because he didn't know what to do after he lost.
After he goes back to being a drunk.
Wesley. Yeah. And Fezzik because they call in the Brute Squad to do the clearing out, and Fezzik is the Brute Squad. And so, like, I think a thing about this movie is, like, the part where it's about love, about love.
Yeah.
It is, like, we see a bunch of different, like,
this thing you Earthlings call love.
We'll get to the very impressive clergyman. But, like, this movie is, like, it is about different ways that people express and, like, love each other.
Yeah.
Like,
because, like, the whole story itself is just, like, an act of love from, you know, grandpa to his grandson. And, like, and that's underlined at the very end. And, like, you know, we see that, like, Fezzik and Inigo, like, have a relationship with each other of a kind because, like, Fezzik nurses Inigo back to health by feeding him and also by waterboarding him back to sobriety.
And, you know, in his love for his, you know, father who died to the man he's trying to avenge with, you know, like that, his love for him pushing him forward. It's really true. There's a lot of, it's mainly pushing on, like, those little...
The love that Billy Crystal and Carol Kane and old man makeup feel for each other as they're reviving Wesley.
The mystical old Jewish couple, you know?
One thing to note, they revive him too fast so he can't really use his arms, so he's effectively just, like...
Yeah, being dragged like a doll.
That's where the, like, physical comedy in Cary Elwes's performance, like, really comes forward. Like, every time that, like, Andre the Giant is, like, having to pull up his head so he can say a line is so funny.
And bless Andre, he's like, oh, that's very good, he turned his head. We should celebrate this.
Like, hey, you moved your finger.
I feel like we interrupted you while you were on a thing there, Evie. Sorry.
I think that's just some that occurred to me, like, while I was thinking about the movie, or it is so like even the villains, like, the way that they talk to each other, the way that the Count and Humperdinck talk to each other, it is very like,
are they, you know.
I didn't necessarily get that vibe, but like they do talk to each other as like, you know, they're trying to make time to get together and like do the torture that they like to do.
Yeah. I think it was that specific exchange they have like before he has to like go into like the tree basement that was like, it feels like there's some subtext here. Yeah. Like, it's probably me reading into it too much, but like, are they, you know?
Considering that his whole thing is gaining power by killing his wives, apparently, he has no interest in females, so... How do you find your...
Who can say?
You know.
But yeah, that's very true, Evie.
It sounded like they were trying to, like, schedule the next episode of a series they were watching together.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was more like, hey, when's the next group watch of the torture?
We gotta catch up on Severance.
We really stalled out on our Breaking Bad rewatch. Like, we stopped at season 3, and, like, season 4 is when it gets really good. Like, we gotta get back into it.
Gotta plan, and they're never gonna, but, yeah.
We need to finish Andor before the second season comes out.
Yeah.
We do, actually. Dropping the kayfabe for a moment, like, we actually do need to finish watching Andor.
But...
Shit, I have like a scene where Buttercup
tells like the Sedile, okay, he's like, I'm gonna go kill yourself. He's like, oh yeah, have fun.
I got a kiss from her. You still like it later by that? Yeah. You've been so kind to me, but now I will never see you again. For once I get to the honeymoon suite, I plan to kill myself. Oh yeah, yeah, good, good. Look, she kissed me. Like, just like,
the impressive clergy, man.
Oh, man.
It's just so...
The long-winded, drawn-out speech impediment, like, clergy.
And Humperdinck is just giving him like, the, like, on. Come on, move on with emotion.
Do you have the wing?
Yeah. Do you have the wing?
He's great.
Them doing, like, the Trojan horse with, like, Andre the Giant on, like, the shoulder of, like, three other Andre the Giants in, like, a giant trench coat.
Yeah.
Being wheelbarreled through the court.
Just have Andre cut a promo.
I will never give up this key. Okay, can you rip his arms off? Here's my key.
Oh, here's the key.
Like, Andre the Giant delivering one of the greatest, like, wrestler-turned-actor performances in this movie.
No, yeah.
Like, it's such a fucking shame that, like...
Yeah.
Like, fuck Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's the big thing I come back to always, is fuck Hulk Hogan.
He's a big, ugly goon, and I want to squash his face.
Yeah. He sucks Hulk Hogan dick... And he sucks Hulk Hogan ass.
I break his back. I make him humble. Andre the Giant should have had a movie career instead of Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Like, rest in peace to a real one.
Andre the Giant is just... He's so big and gentle. Like, literally, like, the definition of gentle giant.
Like, going back to the level of humanity that's, like, displayed throughout this movie, like, Andre is such perfect casting because, like, out of all of, like, the wrestlers that you could have put into a movie during, like, that day and age, he is the one that most just... He has that fucking vibe to him. Like, he's large, but he's, like, very soft around, like, the face and body, so he just works.
Yeah.
And, like, the way that he talks normally is just, like, he has an almost soft affectation to the way that he speaks. Like, it just works. Like, he's so perfect in, like, conveying the warmness that this movie as a whole is, like, meant to get across throughout it. But yeah, we didn't even mention that, Wesley died in the torture chamber. The Humperdinck came down and cranked the torture machine up to, like, full gear.
Sucked all the ears up.
Yeah. And, you know, they took him to an old Jewish couple who, like, revived him. I love you going back to like the discussion of this being a movie about telling stories, you know, like Inigo like tries to like offer some money. It's not enough money, but he's like, you know, I've done it for free for like a noble cause before. And first Inigo like tries to make up a story about how he died, and then he's like, okay, fine, I'm gonna tell you my story, and this is how, you know, you'll know we're doing a noble cause. And Billy Crystal is just like, I liked your first story better, kid. Like, <Yep. laughs>
and even after like they manage to he uses like a pair of bellows to like get Wesley's like his basically like his last breath to get him to say, I'm doing it for true love, and Miracle Max pretends to mishear him and is just like, no, you were talking about playing cards.
If Carol Kane has to come around the corner berating him, no,
you're a liar.
You liar.
Oh, you want to get it at the king? Well,
yeah. Oh, wait. This will hurt the king for swipe. I'll do that. Let's fucking go. You'll hurt him.
There's no more noble cause.
You don't want to do it because you were a bitch maid.
Which, listen. Speaking as a Jewish woman who is fully fueled by spite, real. Noble cause.
But yeah, so you get the whole sequence of like them storming the castle, and the core of this movie, for me at the very least, is like around the confrontation between Inigo Montoya and the six-fingered guy. Like, that is the moment that like truly makes the film.
Sure.
For me personally.
But beforehand, where he challenges to a duel and he just goes and then runs the opposite direction.
He just like, runs like a martial dog. Arts final.
But that's like exactly what I'm saying. Like, even starting at like the false start, that is like from there, that is what makes the movie for me. It's about like these very serious people, because Inigo Montoya like lays out early on in this movie, like, no, this is my fucking thing. I'm going to do it. It is my
whole life.
Yeah.
This is what I've been aiming toward to make right. This is what I'm going to say, and I'm going to make it happen.
And he finally gets to do that. And then the guy takes the piss out of the moment by dropping his sword and running away. And then, you know, there's the little chase. But then it comes back into it. It's about setting up serious things, taking the piss out of it, but being like, no, but actually this is still fucking serious.
It's still on. Yeah.
Like, he confronts him. The dude, like, gets too much of a head start, so he's able to, like, get the drop on him and throw a knife into his stomach. You think that Inigo's just gonna die there.
Yeah.
But he's able to, like, pull the knife out and, like, with the last of his strength, like, beat him in the fencing duel. He, like, gets him cornered, and, you know, he says his line, and as he's getting ready to kill him, the count is like, I'll give you anything. And you think you have the moment where the movie undercuts itself again, like, kind of going through, like, a jokey exchange where Inigo is like, okay, I want all of these things, you know, yada, 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 as he's, like, continuing to take, like, just, like, little slashes at the dude. He does, like, the same scarring that the guy did to him as
when he was a kid. Yeah. You also kind of get the slight tension of, oh, man, is he going to use this to, like, get out of this, too? Like,
well, I don't believe that for a second. Like, as soon as he has him cornered, I'm still in on, like, no, he's still definitely gonna kill this guy.
Sure.
But, like, he gets the scarring, he stabs him in the exact same places that the count had stabbed him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets him down to that last moment where, like, the guy asks him, what do you want? Yeah. And he says, I want my father back.
You son of a bitch.
And just gets him. And it's fucking great.
It's such a good
scene.
Oh my god.
Like and beautiful. It is the thing that is like the core of that movie is like, even despite, you know, the way that we tell stories being so much about like, you know, laying out these dramatic things, but knowing when to like throw a pie or put a little bit of that romance in there. At the end of the day, it is still like about this thing. Like we are, this is our goal here and we are going to accomplish the goal that we have set out as writers.
We are so poisoned by like comedic tongue in cheek that like, it's, as you said, they're not putting their heart in it anymore. This film gets that balance so perfect.
Yeah.
And it's so good at just genuinely believing in what it's doing and the characters like just being there for it. It's just so fucking good.
I mean, you even kind of get that in that like last confrontation that Wesley and Humperdinck have with one another, where like Wesley is still like all flopped out on the bed in the in Buttercup's room, and you know Humperdinck comes in and he's like, ah, finally I have you, a duel to the death. And like, no, Wesley says to the pain, and like just while still flopped out describing all the ways that he's gonna fucking torture him once he like is able to move again.
Well, yeah, he goes through the steps and then he's like in the ears. He's like, no, not the ears.
You leave the ears.
Yeah.
You need to be able to hear how much everyone fucking hates you. Like, now
hear
that
the women shrieking at what an ugly mess I've left you. Like, I want you to feel that. I want you to hear all of that.
And, you know, he gets up out of the bed and, you know, you have the audience pop up of like, oh, yeah, he's not flopped out. They're going to have a fucking fight. He's going to fucking kill him. But he doesn't. He just ties him down.
Yeah.
Like, it's a movie that so, like, sincerely believes in, like, the pure nature of, like, Wesley as a character. That's like, no, he would not, like, kill this person. Like, you know, he might poison Wallace Shawn.
Who hasn't?
Let him die that way.
Yeah.
But he's not going to, like, brutally torture this person.
Yeah, an important thing is that, like, Humperdinck, like, surrenders. Like, he's a coward. And so, like, at that point, he's already lost. Like, why would he kill him?
He's lost in the marketplace of ideas.
But yeah, and then, you know, they all ride off on, like, white horses. That shot of her, like, jumping out the window with, like, her dress billowing, like, as she's, like, falling slowly is such a, like, beautiful, like, warm shot in that film. Like, it just, you see that and you feel fucking good.
Yeah. And everyone's got their shit sorted out too, because like you hear Employee saying like, you know,
I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, I spent my whole life working through spite to do this one goal, but now I don't really know what to do. And he just says like, you thought of pirating?
Clear, I like, got now just we're just the work job together. For you.
So like they've all got their shit figured out, and they can just ride off in that perfect little ending.
Except, you know, you got to get one last kiss.
Yeah,
and you know. Peter Falk stops right before the kiss because earlier on, Fred
there's
said,
a couple things with love interest where the kid is like, I don't want to hear about like, kissing. This is going to be a kissing book.
Yeah, like, and then the kid is like, well, no, I want to hear about that. I think it might not be that bad.
Yeah,
and
like, I don't think I mind so much.
Like, it just gets to that core nature of things where, like, we as people just love stories. And it's all about, like, the way that the story is, like, pulled.
Yeah.
That, like, really pulls you into it. It is a story that like truly loves storytelling. Like that is the thing that like really resonated with me the most throughout this movie. Is you can tell how much like Rob Reiner and like, cause this is, and also this is originally based on a book. You could tell how much like the person who wrote that book, like just really loves the act of crafting a story
sure.
to tell to people. And like that ending moment is so perfectly about like how even the most cynical person can like get pulled into it when it's done correctly.
I just want to note the name of the novel is The Princess Bride, S. Morgenstern's classic tale of true love and high adventure, the good parts version.
That's awesome.
But yeah, and then, you know, after that, you know, Grandpa's getting ready to head out. And as he's heading out the door, little Fred Savage is like, do you think you could come back tomorrow night and tell me that story again? And he's like,
as you wish.
As you wish. Like, it's so precious.
It is.
Like, it is just, as Evie, as you described it, like a warm hug of a movie. Like, it's not quite my warm hug like a Little Miss Sunshine or something like that is, but I, watching this movie now, I get the reverence that this film has for itself.
Sure. Honestly, I could see it becoming my comfort watch if I'm ever in like a fucked up place and I just need something nice to throw on in place of your Little Miss Sunshine. You know, it's one of those things that I'm like, I would love to just throw this on when I need something happy. Mm-hmm. Something just kind of like some good bread, you know? It was great. I'm glad I picked this one.
Yeah, I'm glad you did too. As someone who had never watched it, I'm glad to have finally have that one like checked off the list.
Yeah.
But that's generally like my final thought on this movie. Like, it's a good time. I was able to get a little bit of meat off those bones, but like it was nice, fun, empty calories that left me feeling good afterwards, personally.
Hell yeah.
Brie, your final thoughts?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've said everything I'm gonna. We covered all the bases pretty well. This was something that, like, the reason it kind of came up, and I mentioned this in the previous podcast, but I was doing my VTubing, as I do, and chat was kind of, I don't remember how, but that movie came up in conversation, and that's where I thought, like, oh, I kind of want to rewatch that. And everyone's like, no, yeah, it holds up. It's still really good. Like, do. I'm like, all right. So that was what decided this. Mm-hmm. Watch me on twitch.tv/EasyBreezyTV, and you can help slightly change what we watch on this portion of things. But like, no, yeah, it was kind of cool to just get an organic, like, yeah, you know what?
That's know right, what everyone. We're doing give Bree $5 and she'll put it in her bank of movies she's
Bree
gonna try
can
to connect.
Be she'll put it on
the big Leo. Can be bribed. 100%. But no, just like, I love the organic way that this kind of came up, that I was like, I need to bring this to the table.
Sure.
So like, and I'm glad I did. It does hold up. It's a lovely film, as we've said already. And that's really about it.
For sure. Evie, your final thoughts?
Yeah, like I said before, I was already familiar with this movie. And yeah, it's great. It's a great movie. The stuff with the kid and Peter Falk hit more for me than usual, because like within the past year, like my grandfather passed. Oh, and like we had the kind of relationship where like when I was young, we would spend time together like that. And
I had that with mine too.
Yeah, it was very, it touched me more than it normally would. But yeah, I really enjoyed watching it.
Cool. For sure. Bridget, your final thoughts on this film?
This is a film I've seen before, definitely seen various parts of it multiple times, and I still think it's, you know, a fun, enjoyable romp, as they say, filled with love and giant rats. Also, shout out to the other puppet animal, which was the shrieking
giant
eel. The eels that shriek.
We didn't even talk about that moment where it's like the one scary moment aside from the rats in this movie, where like it's starting to approach Buttercup in the ocean, and then Peter Falk is like, wait, I can stop. You look like you're getting concerned. Like, <Yeah. laughs> he's very much like, oh, you're starting to actually believe in this story.
Oh,
let me take a moment to let you know that things are going to be okay here. It's great.
Yeah.
Listen, son, everything's gonna be Daijou Wu.
The this movie versus Shrek is really the most without love it cannot be seen sort of dynamic in cinema.
Yeah. Anyways, continue your final thoughts.
Yes, please continue.
But yeah, this is good. Chances are, dear listener, you probably have already seen this, possibly. But yeah, if you so wish to see it,
as you wish.
Yeah.
Well, Bridget, are you ready to tell the listeners how we're going to be watching Gundam Reconquista and G Movie One Core Fighter?
Well. Yeah, it, you know, this is a super difficult decision because this movie actually does connect with The Winds in the Willows and Congo.
Now's your last chance to swerve, if you're going to swerve.
And so, yeah, Gundam Reconquista NG is something I think about a lot. And so there are... a five movie compilation, and I've never used a wild card. I could have connected. I could have had a golden record. I could have been the put it on the list sweetheart.
But you could have gone against the one tool that I introduced specifically for you. Like, if anything,
was so worried that there would be no way to get back to anime.
Yeah, that I was like, okay, fine, we'll allow you the tool.
And so, I have a question.
Yes?
Are you ready for a Reconquista?
Yeah, absolutely. I am so ready for Reconquista.
I know nothing about it.
I'm raring.
Yoshioki Tomino is about to tell a message of the future sent to the children of the world. Gundam Reconquista NG Movie 1 Go Core Fighter, because that's what my wild card pick is. You're going to learn a lot about nuts.
Turn G Gundam. All right.
I'm so glad
damn near killed
and she didn't pick Wind in the Willows. I appreciate her constraint or her restraint.
I was almost convincing her to not necessarily go for Wind in the Willows, but to swerve. I was mostly convincing her to swerve because I was like, it would be so funny if after like so long of like everyone on this podcast knowing that you were going to pick this movie as your last choice to not pick that movie and also not use your wild card at all. Like, that would have been a very funny punchline for me.
That's what you would have thought I was going to do. And so I... I, realizing that that's what you would have thought, decided that this is the film we're going to watch.
But as I've said before, my dear friend Evie also wishes to see it, so sorry everybody else. We're going on Mr. Tomino's wild ride.
All right.
We're down to the last two movies in our first year of podcasting.
Crazy.
Like, here's the secret. Me and Evie both know what the last movie is.
Yeah.
You two don't know what the last movie is.
No, don't tell me. I want it to be a surprise.
Don't tell me talk about it's the live. Sequel to Minecraft, but part PvP or whatever.
I can tell you it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not
that. It would be very funny if it were that. But I know it's not that. But yeah.
You might wish it was by the time it's over, but it's not that.
For the people listening to the podcast, know that the season finale of Put It on the List will be live streamed at twitch.tv/wifecity, where we will be ranking individually all the movies that we watched for this season and deciding what the first movie of the next season is going to be. There will probably be other segments that happen, but those are the two main things that are going to happen.
Wait, how's that working?
The same way it did last time. We're going to spin a fucking wheel
with our names, our movies.
That part is a good question. I almost like the idea of just going by our names, and as we go through like eliminating names off the wheel, we reveal what the movie we were going to choose.
That's interesting.
I have an idea.
What's the idea?
Here's the idea. What if the first movie for the second season is listener selected?
I don't know if we have... That's me. I don't think we have enough listeners.
No, here's the... How about this? How about we do a combination? How about we have our names on the wheel and each person or whoever is listening, at the very least for this very first time that we are doing this, whoever is listening can submit to our Blue Sky account, put it on the list.bsky.social. They can submit a single movie of their choosing and they will get their name on the wheel as well.
Yo.
And we eliminate that way. So everyone gets to participate. It's not simple.
Do you really think Owen's going to pick a good movie?
Yes.
Maybe.
I think Owen can pick a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
He could.
I think he would also.
I think we can afford Owen the same amount of grace that we could afford you when you could pick good movies, but hey, sometimes don't.
I just picked a good movie.
That is yet to be determined.
I've already determined it's a great movie.
You said that about Uma Musume as well, so your record ain't good.
I love how divided everyone's response to that on the like on the YouTube recording.
It's a very divided is. Like the like dislike ratio on that Uma Musume episode halved. On YouTube is fully halved.
It's very welcome to controversy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, same here. But anyways, that's talking about the future plans. For now, our plan for next time is Gundam Reconquista NG, Movie 1, Go Core Fighter. Bree, aside from Twitch, where can people find you on the internet?
You can also find me over on Blue Sky under Asnesbo, A-S-N-E-S-B-O. You can also have me do art for you. You see the art there, like, I want her to do art for me, or make me a VTuber, or do rigging for me. Well, you can do that over at vgen.co/Asnesbo. And you can reach out to me there. But that's about it.
For sure. Bridget, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at twitch.tv/sasquatchless, where I play things like Little Ralph and
Kazuno No Town
and the hot air balloon game that's hard.
It's probably not that difficult.
I they think should call this a hard air balloon.
No, it is. It's hard.
Okay.
I should call this a larger when I see.
You are at the mercy of nature. You saw my hot air balloon. Just no directions were pointing towards the map, and it
let
just
me tell you.
Wind.
Get good.
Of,
yeah, which when you're in a hot air balloon, there's no steering wheel.
Is it raining?
I don't know if
and
you know
yell
this.
Up at the sky. Get good.
Yeah.
I'm with you on this one, Bridget. That game is very aesthetic, but also
feel,
kind of bullshit.
Exactly, Evie. I feel like if you went up and said, get good at the clouds, you would be instantly struck by lightning.
Aside from Twitch, can people find you anywhere else?
I'm on Blue Sky, I guess, if you want to... See, if you want to celebrate the reason for the season.
Macro March.
That's right. Get your keybinds up and going.
Evie, where can people find you on the internet?
Sometimes on stream with Bridget, but mostly nowhere.
Word. People can find me on the internet, sometimes also on Bridget's streams. However, the other places you can find me, you have to find me yourself. Oh, that's yeah. Not my job to
you
do.
You have to go spelunk.
But regardless, that's been the podcast.
Just like Donkey.
That's been the podcast.
That's been the podcast. Bye, everyone. Goodbye.
She's turning on the that's those two.
We don't need to go over our names again.
Yes, we do.
My name's Alkelbarn Humperdinck, and I kidnapped the Princess Buttercup. Yeehaw.
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film? That's the gist. Put it on the list.
It took me 2 seconds to realize you were doing this.
Because if I count the dog barks.
I know.
For some reason, it's a very odd thing.
I need to get in the headspace for podcasting. Just like I feel like I'm out of alignment.
I think it's because
I need to find that. I need to match the energy. somehow, and I'm not sure how to get there.
I think the misalignment came from, like, we started off talking about anime, like, no lube, just raw in there on anime, and you're like, oh, God. What are we doing?
I mean, that's just me. I'm just talking about the things.
I mean, that's true. That is you. Do you wanna, like, actually take a moment, Evie? Or is this kayfabe prepping?
It's not kayfabe, but it's just like, I don't know what to... You know what? Actually, I'm gonna take, like, 5 minutes and get more freshened up. I need to, like, de-scuzz real quick.
All right.
So I can get it. I'll be right back.
Everyone, get ready the Brianna minute. So... I just came back from the gym. I've decided 2 weeks ago to get fit, so I joined a gym, and I've been very consistent every other day going and whooping my ass. And
How's gym?
I'm not going to dox myself.
No, how's gym? She's asking how is gym.
I thought you said what gym. I was like, what do you mean?
The most pun-pilled person here gets confronted with a pun joke and is like, I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm Jim Pill. Yes, Earthworm Jim. No.
You don't want to work out with him.
No.
No, you don't. But yeah, he always... I got stunlocked on talking about shitty video game. Anyway, so let me just say to all of you out there, hey, I hate to be the gym pill, gym rat fucking weirdo out here, but you know what? Consistency is more important than always constantly breaking your... Hold on. Always constantly breaking your goals and everything. You know what? As long as you're going out there moving and doing stuff, that's what's important, you know? That's not calories in, calories out. You're burning every day, but it helps to be a little bit physical, you know?
However,
finding myself, like, really getting to that point now where, like, I'm having these bursts of energy in the middle of nowhere in, like, the middle of a workout where I'm like, oh, I can't go on. Yes, I can. And I'm, like, running like crazy. The endomorphine is kicking me in the face, and I'm like, let's go. So the more excited I get about fitness, the more I realize I'm going to become a chud who talks about fitness, and I just want to apologize.
You're hitting the point where you might start, I wish I could remember the, like, turn of phrase for it, but, like, you're, like, carb maxing, like, you're trying to figure out, like, what are your macros? You're, like, trying to, like, still figure out, like, okay, what should I be eating in a day that's, like, enough but not too much? Like,
that's everyone, it's Macro March.
Here's where I am when I don't want to get beyond, like, just so I don't become an anal weirdo.
That's a fetish joke.
Yeah. It's like, I want to... I'm always being like, am I getting carbs? Am I getting protein? Like, am I keeping somewhat within a 2,000 calorie diet? I'm good. That's all I need to do.
You're watching your macros.
Is that what that is?
Yes.
That's a really fucking nerdy way to say that.
Yeah, one could say that gym rats are also nerds.
Punch me in the stomach. That's like, I can't be that person.
What's your keybind for that, Brie?
For being punched in the stomach?
That's a different macro.
She's making a
macro punch.
You were joking. You're funny. But yeah.
This is going to be a really weird, like, stinger to put at the end of this episode.
Yeah. But yeah, everyone, keep shooting
macro
for those goals.
Monday.
Punch
Show
the sun.
Me that
stay
macro.
Hydrated. Keep on going. You can push for 5 more minutes. You got this.
Looking at Bridget's hidden folder on her desktop.
You're capable.
It's Macro
more
Monday.
Than you realize.
Show me them macros.
Lift those weights, baby. You got this. My ass and tits have never been more visible.
Are you okay over there, Bridget?
It's just my favorite Brie-ism is powering through when other people are making
she's talking about how you have a habit of, like, you stop and then someone else is like, oh, okay, it's my turn to talk.
I'm talking and you talk over me constantly, but I'm nice and I don't point it out. You don't let me finish. Everyone talks over me. They're like, Brie, why are you talking over me? And you gaslight me. That's what always happens.
You gotta learn the body language like I've had to, where it's like, to tell people, like, wait, I'm not actually
I have
done
been
here.
Interrupted every 5 seconds with a pun or a joke, and then interrupted with, why didn't you get that pun or joke? And it's because I was talking. So, good night, everyone.
I don't know. I thought it was punny.
And we're at a standstill. Where's she going? What's she doing? You don't have much wire on that headphone.
Coming back.
A dinosaur story.
I love visual jokes in an audio podcast.
That's the reboot of that film series.
Who's the megabyte of it? Huh? You don't know reboot.
Jay doesn't understand the pun.
That one's more understandable.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. I can't say I'm always thinking about reboot.
There's one name I remember from that, and it's the villain's name. It's the pun itself that is like, oh, megabyte, because he's got a big mouth. You know,
Head empty, thinking about pilk.
Think about pilk.
Drink pilk. Pilk. Oh, no, don't drink pilk.
Think about pilk.
Yeah. As long as we don't talk about grilk.
Is that like grape milk?
No, that's the Grinch sauce in your milk.
That's disgusting.
Oh, who is that? A you invention or no. Did someone else? Okay.
That's proxy.
Okay, that's proxy. That's pretty bad.